things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Doing all right.
We're doing all right. We're at the beginning.
At the beginning with you.
I'm relieved to not be the only one singing on this podcast.
Never. You're never alone in this podcast.
Sony, come sign us.
But maybe don't, though.
Don't come looking for us.
Welcome to another episode of A Little Bit Grim, a podcast hosted by Taylor.
And Jenny.
Yeah. And we're here to tell you all about the ookie spookies.
Yeah, it's spooky today.
It's a ghost episode.
Oh, I'm hype about my story. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Is wholesome the right word? It's not.
Is it lighthearted?
It's not. Yes. Okay. There's no demons.
Oh. Okay.
Are we on opposite ends of the spectrum today?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's why I am going first once again. Yeah. But before we jump right in.
Do you want to tell everybody about your bright shiny for today?
Yeah, my bright shiny, my a little bit good. Can it just be a person? I'm just very thankful for Ian.
Oh, Ian.
My little fiance, Schnoogle Nugget. I love him so much. And he has been super fantastic to me for past week, because real life has been not that super fantastic. But he has been.
That's
so
great.
I'm grateful for Ian.
Bright shiny person.
Bright shiny people.
Aw, yay. Mine was that I got to sleep in today, and then Ryan and I went and got breakfast.
Nice. Did you go to Cosmos?
Of course we went to Cosmos.
Cosmos, sponsor us.
Yeah, for real,
bro. We eat there like twice a week.
Each.
Minimum. Each.
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 Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the other day, Ryan and I went to like a early lunch, and it was like 11. And I was like, where do you want to go? And he was like, I don't know, babe. Can it just not be Cosmos? Because, like, sometimes we go there, like, twice a week.
No, we're going to Cosmos.
And I was like, I mean, I guess if we have to go somewhere else, we can. But, like, I wanted those blueberry pancakes.
Right. I'm just off the book at Cosmos. Like, don't give me a menu. Like,
no.
I know what you have. Like, I...
And we've gotten to a point where we, like, curate our own meal.
Yes.
And...
Yeah. And we have Holly.
Yeah. She's like been promoted.
Yeah. She like is part-time hostessing now. Very happy for her.
It was wild. There was like a lot of, there's a lot of new people there, I think, since COVID.
Yes, there are.
And today we heard at least 3 plates break.
Oops.
And back in the kitchen. And every time I was like, ooh,
somebody's new. Whoops. Marco's going to go yell at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, local diner drama.
Oh, love it. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So that's Cosmos. Sponsor us again.
Yeah, for real.
Speaking of local.
Oh, you're doing a local one?
Well, not local here.
Oh, okay.
I am going to tell you about a locale. This one is a little lengthy-ish.
Okay. And this is a paranormal episode.
This is a paranormal.
I don't think we said that.
This is Ookie Spooky Spook Show.
All right.
I'm about to tell you
a spook smoke show.
A
spooky smoke.
A spoke show.
A spoke show.
A spoke show.
I like it.
I do too. Have you heard of a place called Pluckley?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well let me tell you about them.
Please do.
Pluckley and Pluckley Thorn are two close clustered neighborhoods in the Pluckley civil parish in the Ashford district of Kent, England.
That's not local.
Well, listen, you'll get it. You'll get it here in a minute.
Okay.
The landscape of the area itself is on the edge of a well-drained plain with the lowest slopes of the Kent Downs to the northwest.
Oh, sounds lovely.
Pluckley is mostly agricultural in land use and centered 5 miles or 8 kilometers west of Ashford. As of the last census in 2011, 1,069 people called Pluckley Village home, and so did a whole fuckload of ghosts.
Yeah.
In 1998, the Guinness Book of World Records officially recognized Pluckley and Kent as the most haunted village in the world.
Wow.
Locals.
Guinness getting up in there.
I'm getting up in there. You know it's haunted.
When Guinness World Records says it's haunted.
It's haunted, officially. Locals say the village and surrounding area has between 12 and 16 ghosts. Resident ghosts.
It's quite a few.
Yeah, it's quite a few. The Guinness World Records puts the number at 12. Officially. Capital right. 12.
Okay. That's like a communal van worth of ghosts.
It's a Scooby-Doo van.
Yeah, the mystery machine.
Oh, my God. Honestly, this would be a really good, like, spin-off Scooby-Doo episode.
Yes.
Besides its ghosts, the area is also known for its idyllic and unspoiled countryside, made famous by the television series The Darling Buds of May, which was filmed there in the early 1990s.
Oh.
The landscape remains a patchwork of fields with sprawling woodlands and orchids, and the lovely people of Pluckley Village live their idyllic provincial lives in the English countryside with the following roster of Oogie Spooks.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through the list.
Please do.
Number one, the Screaming Man.
Oh, okay.
Starting off strong.
Yeah.
Ah! In Pluckley Brickworks, a man was smothered by a drying clay wall that fell on top of him. There was, however, I did find a conflicting report. This is the first story I put sources in. So I will tell you the sources at the end. There's a conflicting report that he fell to his death.
Okay.
The screams are said to be heard coming from the brickworks, and there are no reports of a visible ghost there, just the sound of a terrified man screaming for his life, echoing amongst the buildings.
How horrible.
How horrible. Horrible number two.
Yeah.
The Red Lady.
Okay.
At St. Nicholas Church, the ghost of Red Lady Daring has been seen wandering the churchyard in the chapel where she was laid to rest. It is said that the Red Lady's illegitimate baby died at birth, leaving its grieving mother to die shortly afterwards from a broken heart. Her apparition is most often seen at the chapel. This area is the focus for a large amount of paranormal activity, including unexplained knocks, bangs, and a dancing light in the window.
Hmm.
She can often be seen with a little white ghost pooch who follows her around.
Ghost dog.
Ghost dog. So that goes like 2.5.
Okay.
Number three, we have another lady. She is the White Lady.
I knew it was coming.
The White Lady.
I knew it.
Every good ghost story has the White Lady.
Yeah, it's a classic.
It is a classic. And this woman puts them all to rest. They cannot hold.
Was she a bride that was something on her wedding day and then she killed herself or killed her husband?
The White Lady's ghost is also thought to be a member of the Daring family. Her spirit has also been seen in the Daring Library in Surrenden Daring. The local legend is that the woman's beauty was famed throughout the village, and when she died at a tragically young age, her husband was grief-stricken. He could not bear the thought of the effect that the ravages of the grave would have upon her looks, so he had her body wrapped in a priceless white flowing gown. She was placed in an airtight lead coffin with a single red rose laid upon her breast. Sealed inside a further series of airtight lead coffins, she was finally encased in a casket of solid oak and buried in a deep vault in the Daring Chapel. On misty autumn mornings, her spirit manifests in the churchyard as beautiful in death as she was in life. Clutched before her, she holds a single red rose.
Wow. That's beautiful, but also very creepy.
Very creepy. The White Lady was last seen while Surrenden Daring was at the U.S. Embassy. Between the two held a lonesome vigil. The White Lady was last seen while Surrenden Daring was at the U.S. Embassy between the two world wars. Mr. Walter Winans supposedly held a lonesome vigil one Christmas Eve in the library with his lone hunting rifle. When the White Lady appeared before him, he reputedly shot her, and it passed right through the apparition.
Don't shoot at ghosts.
He did not.
That's how you get poltergeists.
He thought it was a German. She passed through the apparition, and she vanished through a paneled wall, which is supposed to have led to a secret tunnel that linked the Daring House with the church.
Okay, I like secret tunnels.
I also like secret tunnels. Number four, the teacher.
Oh.
Henry Turf was the headmaster of Smarden School. He was close friends with Richard Buss and Pluckley. He would travel to Pluckley every Sunday to visit Buss and discuss politics.
Oh, lovely.
However, one Sunday, the headmaster from Smarden went missing. He was later found on the land leading to the mills. He had hung himself in a tree. Oof. Tuff's ghost had been seen on the lane hanging from the branch where he killed himself, and this ghost was later seen by a newspaper journalist who said that the ghost was dressed in a green blazer and striped trousers. The reason for his suicide is unknown.
Okay.
Number five is the Watercress Woman, and I apologize for this, but an old gypsy woman
is how she has been described in the article that I read.
Okay.
She made her living by selling watercress at the Crossroads Bridge and now haunts the area.
Huh.
She died when a spark from the pipe she was smoking ignited the glass of gin that she was holding, and she set herself ablaze and died screaming and cursing.
Oh my God.
Honestly, I could see myself going in a similar fashion. Number six is the Highwayman.
Okay.
Okay. Robert Dubois was a highwayman who operated in the Stewart area just outside of Pluckley. Dubois' routine was to hide behind a tree on the corner known as Fright Corner and jump out at his intended victim, giving them a fright and stunning them. Just like a prankster.
Sure.
This proved rather successful, but also became very predictable.
Yeah.
Eventually, his run of terror came to an end when a guard, some reports say like a thief in the night, killed him with a spear when it was thrown through the oak tree where Dubois usually hid, piercing and pinning him to the tree. The tree has since been uprooted, but the ghost of Robert Dubois said, and the tree he was pinned to appear often. Some say that the ghost of Dubois still appears on the corner, jumping out at people traveling on the road, much like he did in life.
Oh man, it must be much more scary now that it's a ghost.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I would almost rather it be a ghost than like a real man jumping out from a tree at me like, bleh.
I mean, can you think of, like, the first time it happened after he died, though?
Oh, God.
Like, they were like,
huh?
You dead.
But you're supposed to be dead.
Right.
I still would rather have a ghost than, like, there's nothing scarier to me than, like, a real man.
That's true.
Okay, so number seven and number eight, they go hand in hand.
All right.
This is the Lady of Rose Court and her holy lover.
Oh.
The young woman, thought to be a mistress of one of the Daring families, haunts the house called Rose Court. On Station Road in Pluckley is a property called Greystones. A monk is said to haunt the building grounds. The monk is said to have lived in the Tudor times, and it was reputed to have fallen in love with the daughter of a neighboring property. The affair was discovered by the girl's father, and he forbade his daughter to see her lover again. The lady, so distressed at not being able to be with her lover, drank a poisonous cocktail and died.
Oh my God.
The monk sank into a state of melancholy and bitterness, and his only solace was to walk the green fields and leafy lanes where they had enjoyed so many romantic interludes together.
How sweet.
As the years passed, he sank deeper into depression, pining for his dead lover, and finally died of a broken heart.
Oh.
His ghost, however, continues to wander the neighborhood and was last seen in 1989 by an American journalist who glimpsed the unmistakable brown-robed figure drifting behind the house.
How sweet.
Very sweet. Number nine is the Colonel of Parkwood.
Oh, I like it.
An unnamed man traveled to Parkwood near Pluckley and committed suicide by hanging himself.
Oh, don't like it.
Don't like it. Now his ghost is seen marching through the woods in full military costume, hence his nickname, Colonel. His ghost is completely harmless and does not appear distressing, and most people who've seen him don't even know that he is a ghost.
Oh.
They just thought he's like some old-timey dude walking through the woods, and they would like bring him up with the owner of the local pub, and they're like, oh no, that's the Colonel. He's dead.
Oh my God.
Right.
I would be like, I need to stop drinking now. Yes. Like, I'd be like, I'm done. I need to go to bed.
I'm out. I'm out of here.
I clearly reached my limit.
Number 10 is the Phantom of the Pinnix. Richard Dickey Buss may be the ghost haunting the ruined windmill near a house called the Pinnix. The mill was closed down in 1930 and was later destroyed by fire when struck by lightning during a thunderstorm. The Phantom of the Pinnix is a completely black silhouette and is usually seen before a strong storm.
Ah, I like a ghost, like a stormy ghost.
Yeah, I do too. He's like Doppler radar.
Yeah.
I love him.
Like a weather vane.
Yes. I'm into listen.
Weather vane ghosts.
Yeah.
I like it. We should have more of those.
I would like one.
I would.
How do I invite a weather ghost?
We should figure that out.
Yeah. I'll do a little Googling. Number 11 is the Screaming Wood. The woods are located next to Pluckley, and the woods were originally called the Daring Woods, and most people still refer to them as that. The woods gained the nickname the Screaming Woods because at night it is said that you can still hear the screams of the numerous people who got lost and died.
Ooh.
Just screams.
In the woods?
Just in the woods.
Don't go
just
to
screaming.
The woods.
There's a man screaming by the brickyard. There's people screaming in the woods. There's people screaming because a ghost jumps out from behind a tree and scares you. And then number 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-ish.
Okay. All right.
Is located in the Black Horse Pub.
Ooh.
I know.
Love a haunted pub.
I know. I want to go there so bad.
We'll add it to our tour.
We have to. I'll tell you. Okay, hold on. Let me get through this and then I'm going to tell you something really cool. The Black Horse Inn is reported to be haunted by a girl who appears in the fireplace, an unseen hand that lifts cutlery from the dresser, and a cold spot in the kitchen. The ghostly prankster delights in hiding the personal possessions of staff and customers alike. It's locked the landlady out of her pub on more than one occasion. Landlords have complained of glasses on the shelf above the bar moving and dogs barking at something only they can see. The pub was also featured on TV's Most Haunted.
Oh!
They held a seance in the attic.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. Laura Gambling took over the pub in November of 1997, and on her first Sunday was enjoying a cup of tea just prior to opening for the busy Sunday lunchtime session. She noticed a glass on the shelf above the bar move just a little, and as she watched it, she was astonished when it began to slide along the length of the shelf, stopping only when it perched precariously on the edge.
Ah, it's a testy ghost.
Plenty of living people still call Pluckley Village home, and honestly, a small English village with enough ghosts to do like a fantasy football league is my type of town, and I will be moving there immediately.
Oh, okay.
There is a YouTube video that I was like looking to see if there's like clips or footage or interviews, and it's kind of like a brief overview of the history, but it jumps from place to place, and it's the 3D panoramic view. So, like, you can move your phone around and, like, look at all the surrounding.
Gosh.
It is so cool.
That's awesome.
It is so cool. And look, now I'm about to show you, tell you my sources. Okay. Ghoststory.co.uk. Pluckley.net. It has its own little, its own little website. And I don't know how reputable this one is.
Okay.
But it's ghost.fandom.com.
You know, that's all right.
It's literally a website dedicated to ghosts.
Yeah.
And I will probably be referencing it frequently on the paranormal.
From here on out.
From here on out. Just it's like, just going to be my go-to.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, it's not like ooky spooky like I normally.
It's not harmful.
It's not harmful, but it's like, I want to know what it is about the land there that like binds.
Souls there.
Yeah. Or like spirits or like the residual energy. I want to know if there's like a river nearby, if there's like a underwater like brook in the woods or something. I got to know. I got to know more. I got to know.
We'll go there. We'll find out. Don't worry.
Follow us on everything so we can afford to go to England.
Yeah, for, to go ghost hunting. We're doing this for you.
Yeah. Honestly.
We're doing
we'll
the
vlog
research.
It.
Yeah.
Do you want content or not?
For real. All right. Are you ready for mine?
Yes, you have kind of built it up, and I'm like a little... Hold on, let me do this.
Okay.
ASMR.
Oh. All right, so every time, every week, I am like, I don't have the time to like go full balls to the walls on a story, so I need to find something small.
Okay.
That never happens.
You put
ever.
All the balls on all the walls.
Every time.
Yeah.
So... Sure. This is my first two-part episode. So I am covering the exorcism of Annalise Michel.
Oh, no. That's huge. Hold on. I got to take my cardigan off. I got spooked. I got goosebumps.
And I didn't. I thought like about probably like three quarters of the way through the research that this should have been a mashup episode. Mm. But I was already done with it. And it was this morning. And I didn't have time to do another paranormal story.
Okay.
And then I was like, okay, I'm definitely not going to have time to do the true crime portion of this today.
Okay.
Wouldn't you know it? True crime comes out next.
Okay.
So.
Ooh, I love this.
Yeah.
I love this a lot. Okay,
I'm
cool.
excited. Okay.
Okay, so we're getting Oogie Spooky first.
All right. So Anna Elizabeth Michel was born September 21st, 1953 in Germany. Her parents were Josef and Anna Michel, and they were strict. They were a strict Catholic family. They went to mass like twice a week, like uber strict.
Whoa.
They were so staunchly Catholic that when the Reformation happened, they basically said, like, that's all lies and we're not going to listen to that. We are only doing the old ways.
What?
Yeah. Of Catholicism.
Like Orthodox.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
The 2005 film, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, is based on this story. And I'll come back to this a little bit in the next episode, but it is worth noting that most of the story takes place in 1969 to 1976, and the novel The Exorcist by William Peter Blatty was published in 1971.
Okay.
And then the movie came out, I think, in 73.
Okay.
So
we had a little...
This is a lot... this is that era of demons and exorcisms, and...
This is when there was, like, the hysteria with, like, satanic cults doing...
Satanic panic.
Yeah.
Yep. This is definitely that era. So there's a lot that goes into this, and I'll touch more on, like, the science and disorders and... Okay. The trial that comes out of this case.
Next week.
Annalise, or Annalicia, I'm going to call her Annalise because that's easier. And that's what the German, like, name translates to. So says Christine of And That's Why We Drink. Oh, speaking of, my sources are And That's Why We Drink and covered this. Astonishing Legends did a 3-part series on this case.
Jesus.
And each of their episodes was 2 hours long.
Holy
God. So I did not get all the way through it, unfortunately, but... I mean, they go deep dive.
Yeah.
BuzzFeed Unsolved did an episode on this, and then Grunge.com.
Ooh.
So, Annalise had 3 sisters. Marta, Annalise's older sister, got sick and died when she was 8 years old. Annalise would have been 4. Mm. And that really scarred her. She was very close with her sisters. As a child, Annalise was bright, kind, and well-liked. She loved spending time learning more about her Catholic faith and hoped to either be a school teacher or a person that teaches Catholicism to children. Sounds like a Sunday school teacher.
Yeah. Catechism? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. As a child, within Catholicism, there's an idea that you have to atone for your sins, and their family took that very seriously. Mm. So I believe that the, like, old ways was more like atonement can only get you so far.
Okay.
You can't completely atone for your sins.
Ever.
Right. So I think that is... what her family kind of believed, but the current teachings of the church was...
Do not say that.
Right, that, like, atonement can, like, erase your sins.
Absolve you.
Yes. So, Annalise took it so seriously that she would attempt to atone for other people's sins by laying on her own bedroom floor and trying to get God to, like, take her as a sacrifice, basically.
Ooh.
And she would do this... and think of the drug addicts that she would see at the train station.
Oh, God.
Right. As a teen, she was incredibly smart and gifted in school. She learned Latin very quickly and could repeat it pretty quickly.
Okay.
Don't fuck with Latin.
I wouldn't.
Let's not.
Dead languages are dead for a reason.
Let's leave them there.
Let sleeping languages lie.
Right. One of my favorite quotes from a movie of all time is, like, do not read from the book. From The Mummy. And
yeah, yes.
Do not read from the book. Don't read Latin.
No.
Don't read Latin out loud.
No.
No, it's
don't
bad.
Read it in your head.
No.
Sumerian, Assyrian.
Leave the dead languages alone.
Words have power. You don't know what you're trying to tangle with.
Nope.
Anyway.
So, she was 16, and she experienced severe convulsions for the first time that led to her losing consciousness, and she was diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy.
Hmm.
I'm not sure if it was the same day of the first episode or one of the later ones, but she had an experience, like, the next night, I think it was after the first episode, where she said she felt a huge weight on her chest, and she felt something squeezing her bladder until she wet the bed.
Hmm.
She was so embarrassed that she was... When she was able to get up, she cleaned everything up and didn't tell her mom until some time had passed.
Mm.
So she's definitely experiencing some sleep paralysis.
Sure.
So that's also very terrifying.
Yeah.
So about a year later in 1969, she had another episode, and her mother took her to their family doctor, Dr. Voigt. There was also a man named Dr. Luthi, who was a neurologist. Voigt and Luthi figured that it was some kind of seizures causing the episodes.
Okay.
They performed an EEG or a brain scan, but everything looked normal.
Hmm.
Over the next few years, she would have multiple episodes and was prescribed multiple different kinds of medication, but none of them helped. And each time they performed an EEG with no, like, outlandish types of reports coming back, there was a small irregularity, but nothing that the doctors said would be causing this kind of seizures.
Okay.
In late 1969 or early 1970, Elise was admitted into a psychiatric hospital to try to find out what was going on with the seizures, but no one could figure it out.
Ooh.
I think my dang old pages are out of order. Taylor, edit this out.
I can make 90 spooky ghost sounds.
Get in the mystery machine in here. Yeah. Okay. She suffered more seizures there and was also... It also began to show the very troubling signs of demon possession.
Yikes.
She saw faces in her mind's eye that she described as being demonic, and they were grimacing at her. And she heard voices that told her she was damned and that she would rot in hell. She vocalized her concerns about being possessed and requested an exorcism. However, this was a time when science was trying to win out over religion or superstitious behavior, so they decided to put her on antipsychotic drugs instead. However, these did not work, and Annalise fell into a very deep depression.
Mm.
I'm not sure of what the timeline was, how long she was in the psychiatric hospital, or when she got out. Some of these timelines are very, like, they overlap a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to fast forward a little bit to 1973. And she began to hear knocking sounds on her, like in her room. And her sisters corroborated this by saying that they could actually hear it too. She took the meds prescribed to her for 5 years without any change. Finally, with science not holding up its end of the bargain, the Michelle family turned to the church for help. One source I found says that Dr. Luthi suggested that they find a priest, but he would later deny that claim.
Okay.
Annalise had started avoiding all objects tied to the Catholic or Christian faith, crucifixes, holy water, paintings. And once, her mother said that she found Annalise in a room staring at a small statue of the Mother Mary, and her eyes were jet black.
Ew.
Blech.
Yikes. Wait, Annalise's eyes?
Yes.
Oh, got it. Were jet black.
Yes. Okay. Her mother saw it.
Saw her eyes that were jet black looking at Mother Mary.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Sorry.
No, you're... Okay. My brain... didn't like that entire thought.
Was like, nope.
No, you said it fine. It's my cognitive
issues.
Your brain
was like, no thanks, no.
I don't get it. I don't like it.
No, okay. There were also reports of incredibly foul odors either following Annalise. Oh, it gets gross. They were either following Annalise around or coming from Annalise herself, and it was described as the smell of burning flesh or burning feces.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Gross.
Oh my god.
Like, I can barely handle it if I, like, get a little sweaty and have a little bit of BO.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
God. At one point, Annalise went to San Domingo with a family friend who often organized Christian pilgrimages. Her friend became very concerned during this trip and concluded that Annalise was possessed. She would not walk by a cross and would not drink the water from the holy spring. During the trip, Annalise violently acted out and pushed her friend down to the ground. So I have a short letter here that is from a person named Father Alt, and it is the man that would later play a larger role in this.
Okay.
But this little note says, Annalise told me, and Frau Hein would confirm this, that she was unable to enter the shrine. She approached it with great hesitation and then said that the soil burned like fire and she simply couldn't stand it. When she walked around the shrine in a wide arc and tried to approach it from the back, she looked at the people who were kneeling in the area surrounded in the garden, and it seemed to her that while praying, they were gnashing their teeth. She got as far as the edge of the little garden and had to turn back. Coming from the front again, she had to avert her gaze from the picture of Christ in the chapel of the house. She made it several times to the garden and could not get past it. She also noted that she could no longer look at medals or pictures of saints. They sparkled too immensely, and she could not stand it.
What?
Meh.
Okay.
In July 1975, her condition was worsening. She barely slept and was barely eating, except for the spiders and flies that she would eat.
Wait.
Sorry. I didn't realize you were taking a drink. Like, don't eat
like,
bugs.
What do you mean, like, eat? Like, she'd put them in her mouth?
Yeah.
And then proceed to eat them?
Yeah. That's what I mean by eat. Like, don't eat bugs unless you're on Survivor.
Don't go on Survivor. Don't eat bugs. We're a civilized society.
Right.
I just...
we can get our protein from protein shakes nowadays, friends.
Yeah, no need for bugs. I just found out on an episode of Marketing That Changed the World, lobsters, back in the day, were considered the roaches of the sea, and they were very disgusting, and they were caught and fed to prisoners in California along coastal prisons and in the East, until people in landlocked states like heard about it and they started shipping them in, and they were marketed as a delicacy and the prices skyrocketed.
What?
But they used to just be like trash food that we fed to prisoners like back in the 40s.
What?
Isn't that wild?
Oh my gosh. These prisoners were getting treated so well.
They didn't even know, but instead they were like,
lobster.
Ocean bugs.
Ocean bugs.
Yikes. All right. Anyway, sorry. Didn't mean to derail you.
You're good. She was battling daily with the faces that appeared in her mind, and they continued to tell her she was going to hell, and her behavior just continues to get more bizarre. I tried to fit them in here as, like, in order as I kind of could, but it's all over the place. So she would stand in the middle of the room, like in the middle of her living room, and urinate, and then lick it up.
What?
She would compulsively do genuflections to the point where she broke both of her kneecaps.
I'm sorry. I don't know what that... I'm stupid.
No, it's when you, like, kneel to pray.
Oh.
But she would just, like, go down, stand back up. Go down, stand back up. Go down, stand back up until her knees broke.
What?
She did it 400 to 600 times a day.
And she broke her freaking knees?
Broke her kneecaps.
Bro.
We got... No. Uh-uh.
They couldn't stop her? Like, tired out.
Remember how incredibly Catholic her family is?
Okay.
So.
Not gonna stop her from trying to worship the Lord.
Right.
Okay.
The Michelle family, along with most of the community, decided that an exorcism was the only way to save Annalise, and they contacted their local priest, but they were denied twice, saying that the bishop would have to approve the exorcism, and they suggested that the Michelles continue with medical treatment. However, they finally found Father Ernest Ault, and he urged the local priest to perform an exorcism. Annalise wrote to Father Ault and said, "I am nothing. Everything about me is vanity. What should I do? I have to improve. You pray for me." She also once told him, "I want to suffer for the people, but this is so cruel."
There she was, laying on the floor, praying for God to take her as a sacrifice, and who found her instead?
Yep.
The devil.
Mm-hmm. In September of 1975, the local bishop granted another priest named Arnold Renz approval to perform the exorcism, and they were going to use the Rituale Romanum of 1614.
Okay.
To exorcise her, and they
were like classic exorcism. That's like old Salem witch hunt exorcisms.
Yep,
love that.
And they were ordered to complete secrecy.
Okay.
Renz performed the first exorcism on September 24th, 1975. For the next 10 months, she would endure between one and two exorcisms a week for a total of 67 exorcisms, and they could last between 2 and 4 hours each.
Get a more Catholic-y priest to be Catholic over there.
Yeah.
Like, 67, like, you guys are not...
That's too much.
Cutting it.
No.
Have you figured out the name of the demon that's possessing her?
Oh,
have you done... Okay, sorry.
Yeah. I'm about to tell you.
I'm like, y'all are going about this the wrong way. I'm not even fucking Catholic.
Okay, right.
Go on.
Okay, so over the course of these sessions with Renz, Annalise revealed the names of many demons who had taken up in her body.
Ah.
Not paying rent, I'm sure.
The demons just living up there. Rent-free.
Squatters.
Right. Freaking social demons. Socialist demons.
According to the Washington Post, Annalise served as host to the souls of history's greatest villains.
What?
Cain, Judas, Nero, Lucifer, and Hitler.
Ooh, what?
Among
Hitler?
Others.
How did he get in here? He's not a biblical demon.
The other demons want to know this as well.
Okay.
The demons would speak through Annalise, and there were some truly horrifying audio clips. Renz allowed for these sessions to be recorded, and there are about 42 hours of audio total.
Ooh. Can you find them?
Yes. Do you want me to play one for you?
Will you put a clip in?
I'm going to try. I was trying to find a download before I got there, but if you...
Oh.
Hold on for just a second.
Oh, I will wait all day for this.
All right. So it is in German. So, I mean, you might be able to understand some of this, but okay. When I first listened to it, I was like, oh, shit, she is. This is demon language. And then I was like, you're so fucking stupid, Taylor. It's She's German.
Okay.
Ooh. Yikes.
Okay, didn't like that. Couldn't catch a whole lot of what she was saying.
It's translated in the BuzzFeed video, okay. But it's a lot of, you'll never have her back, I'm here for all eternity, a bunch of demon mumbo jumbo. So the Vatican completely seized all of the recordings.
Oh, of course, the fucking Vatican.
They're like, nope, you don't get to know about demons.
Why?
So they took it all, and about 120 minutes total have leaked. So that's pretty much what you can find on YouTube.
Okay.
And there's a lot of them. Like, I did a quick look to see what was out there, and there's a lot of the recordings, and there's a lot of photos of her. I mean, it's the 70s.
Is that the one where she's hovering above the bed? Oh, no. That's Ed and Lorraine Warren. That's, we cover them. The Enfield Haunting.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. No, they don't have pictures of her doing anything crazy supernatural, mm-hmm. But she is definitely unwell.
Sure.
In most of these photos. And the photo of her, like her 16-year-old like yearbook photo, and then the photo of when she died are unsettling.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So if I can... Don't know if I'm going to edit like that out or if I'm going to leave it in and hopefully you guys can hear it, or if I'm going to like insert a clean copy so you guys will find out along with me in the future.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. The demons would actually fight with each other inside Annalise, and mostly they would just say that Hitler was a joke and that he bragged too much.
What?
Like the other demons didn't like Hitler.
Nobody likes Hitler.
I know, but... Oh my God. He brags too much. BuzzFeed claims that one of Annalise's demons was excommunicated priest Valentin Fleischmann.
Fleischmann?
Yes. And even though Annalise should not have known anything about him, she was able to provide accurate details of the appalling behavior that got him booted from the church. Mm. Wonder what you have to get booted from the church nowadays. Not a lot. I mean, not a lot.
I would say probably not a whole lot.
Yeah. During these sessions, Annalise was wasting away. However, she exhibited what those around her to be considered superhuman strength, and she had to be chained down during the sessions because her behavior was so violent and she was so strong.
Oh.
When sessions weren't happening, she would stay in her room and pray when she was coherent and constantly looking beaten up because anytime she tried to walk, she would fall or be pushed and suffered broken facial bones and chipped teeth. She even would lay out like comforters and pillows to try to break her fall. And like as she was falling, an invisible force would pull the comforters away from her so she would still hit the ground.
Oh my God.
By the spring of 1976, Annalise was so malnourished and sick that she contracted pneumonia. In June, she said she had a vision of herself walking with the Mother Mary, and Mary told her that something would happen to end her suffering by July. The final exorcism was done on June 30th, 1976. On tape, Annalise speaks for the last time. She tells Renz and Alt to beg for absolution and then turns her attention to her family. Through tears, Annalise whispers, "Mother, I'm afraid." She dies on July 1st, 1976. Mm. She weighed 68 pounds. And she was 23 years old.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So that is part one.
Mm.
That's the paranormal side. And I will tell you about the heinous trial that comes after this.
I'm trying to like bite my tongue on my thoughts because I feel like they segue into...
What's next?
Yes.
Yeah. Bring them next time.
I will. Oh, they'll be here for a week, churning in my brain. Around. Yeah, just in the washing machine of my mind, just waiting to be
What a good, fun place to be.
I love that. It's really great and fun also.
Yeah. Mm. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. We're happy to have you.
Yeah, welcome to the fam. If you want to follow us on Facebook, we have a Facebook group, and we have an Instagram, and we have a Twitter. And if you want to send us your own...
super spooky tales.
Yeah, super spooky tale. You can send that to alittlebitgrim@gmail.com.
Or if you have a little bit good.
Yeah.
A bright shiny.
Love to know you're a little bit good. You're bright shiny. So you can use the hashtag bright shiny. Mm-hmm. And we'll see those, and we look forward to hearing from you. We love when we get like interaction from you guys. It's the best.
It makes our whole day. We text about it for like 2 hours.
Yeah, we're annoying about it.
Yeah, we are really annoying about it, but we love it when you do. So
it's
please,
so fun. And then feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to know what you think. We love to know what your favorite episodes are and how we can get better and what you love about us already.
And we hope you have a great day.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.